Welcome to Because. I'm your host, Mark Zyla. This week we hear part one of the Becauses of Adam Peters. Adam is the operations director at Clock Inc., an LGBTQ community center in Rock Island, Illinois. He also works as a freelance clinician and judge in the show choir world. He's also worked in politics and done many other things. Adam is a wonderful force here in the Quad Cities, and I had a great time speaking with him. I hope you enjoy hearing part one of the Becauses of Adam Peters. Thank you for coming on Because as well. You just did What's Happening QC, and now we're going to talk about your life story.
It's a double whammy day.
It is. It's going to be a complete day for you in that sense. Well, let's start from the beginning. Where are you from? And tell us a little bit about that area, even if it is the one that we are still in right now.
Well, I actually grew up right outside of Davenport in Walcott, which has the world's largest truck stop, as many of our listeners know. Mm-hmm. Grew up in that small little town. I didn't live on a farm. I lived in the community just a block away from the school. It was actually a pretty nice place to grow up. I was very thrilled about it when I was little, had great experiences running around the town, riding my bike, and then went to Davenport West High School, which was a culture shock. It was like you were going from this little tiny community school to, at that time, the largest high school in the state, which it is not anymore. Mm-hmm. But that was very, very different. And it was quite the beginning to my story. I was very musical when I was in elementary school. Mm-hmm. I had all the solos and all the things.
Right. And an outgoing personality. So it was like, from my memories of elementary school music, it was like easy to get them if you were a person who were like, I want to do it.
Yeah, I'll do one else wanted I'll to do it. And it was like, I want to sing the Snoopy solo. It's supper time. Duh, let's go. I really do need to go. My parents didn't own a camcorder, but I know some families that did, and they recorded everything. And I need to go to those places and get those VHSs because I would love to see myself perform. I have not seen that ever. So,
So is Walcott an area that your family moved to, or is this where the family is from?
That is where the Peters family, they had their farm outside of the town. My dad grew up there. My dad met my mom. They were in a singles group. Okay. They were all young singles at this church group, and they started marrying each other.
Okay.
So my parents married a little bit later in life. They were 30 at that time, mm-hmm. and they moved to Walcott. And my mom was a city girl. She went to Davenport Central, mm-hmm. And she said, "I'll never be a farm wife." And mm-hmm. my dad was like, "Okay, we'll move to the town." So mm-hmm. He worked at Pioneer Hybrid in Durant forever. Mm-hmm. She worked for the Army Corps of Engineers, and then later she was a secretary in the Davenport School District.
Oh, wow.
So she was actually the secretary at Davenport West when I was at Davenport West, which was not good because mm-hmm. if you got in trouble, they called her first.
Right.
And the only good thing about it was I could ask for money when I needed money. Right. So that was handy.
Right. And I'm sure getting a ride to school was never a problem.
Yeah, but it was also wasn't cool. So,
rolling up with mom every day.
Yeah. So once I knew how to drive, we put the end to that. Yeah, so we were OG Walcott. That's all I knew. And my family lived there. And yeah, we had a really nice start there.
That's awesome. Yeah. So let's dig a little bit more into maybe some early musical memories.
Yeah.
You were one who was outgoing and would raise your hand and, mm-hmm. and take the solos yeah. that nobody else wanted. But what other kind of musical experiences did you have like very early on? We'll get to high school.
So I started piano lessons with Diane Daly. I don't think she's with us any longer, but she was a wonderful teacher in Davenport. We did piano lessons for 2 years. And then my parents basically said, you can continue with piano or you could pick a band instrument.
Okay.
And I was like, heck yeah, I want to be a drummer.
All
and
right.
my mom was like, no, you can pick any instrument but percussion. So that crushed my dreams there. And I decided to be a trumpet player, which I liked jazz music at that young age. I was listening to NPR mm-hmm. classical music, but I also was listening to jazz. And got into that. I auditioned for the All City Jazz Band, which is also no longer a thing, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, David Abdo was the director.
Okay.
He was fantastic, young, just awesome. And I made the group, and I was one of 20-ish kids that was in this awesome jazz band. And we gigged all around the Quad Cities, and I still have CDs of us playing, and I listen to them now, and I'm like, dang, we were good,
yeah, yeah.
you know? I was like fourth trumpet, but, you know, the ensemble was fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, that kind of got me going into a very musical world. And, you know, obviously I was already doing singing and solos, but to do band, that really kind of put my mind in a different zone. I wanted to be a trumpet player.
Okay.
Sadly, my parents and, you know, to their credit, they wanted me to have beautiful teeth.
Mm.
And I got braces.
Okay.
And it killed everything about
right.
playing. Like,
yeah,
it
yeah.
hurts so bad.
Right.
I would have to put on the wax on top of the brackets
right.
and
mm-hmm.
like it might work for 10 or 15 minutes, but the amount that I was playing, it just would push through. And I mean, it just kind of, it ruined it.
Right.
really ruined it for me.
It's one of those things where like as a teacher, you know, cause I teach all ages of students, and I've had both you know, elementary school age students that get braces, middle school, and then even adults who've gone and gotten, you know, adult
yeah.
braces. And like, for me, my role as a teacher changes immediately. And it's less about like, let's get you better at the instrument, more along the lines of like, let's manage the next 2 years
yeah.
emotionally and like what your expectations might be. Because yeah, it's like you go from, you know, I'm learning this thing,
yeah.
like I'm doing some pretty cool stuff, and then you get braces and you can't do anything.
Yeah.
You kind of have to like build it back.
Well, and that's the thing too. Like you get braces, you think, okay, I just have to have these for 2 years. And after I get them off, it's going to be so much better. When you take the braces off and you've been playing with this extra padding underneath your lips for 2 years, you've built an entirely different system of
yep.
how you're playing. So
100%.
Once they remove it,
it's not better.
You're ground zero.
Again.
It's like you are starting over.
Right.
And that was the most heartbreaking thing at the end, to be like, oh, wow. Yes, my fingers are nimble and awesome, and I can play the scales really fast, but the sound that I make is not good anymore,
right.
and I have to start over.
Right. It's hard to deal with, for
and,
sure.
And when that happened, I was already very involved in musical theater, very involved in show choir.
Okay.
Show choir Ooh. Is this thing that is huge in the Midwest. And the first show choir I ever saw was Davenport Central. I was an eighth grader. We were at State Ensemble Fest, and my mm-hmm. sister was a piano player for the West Show Choir, and we were waiting to watch this group perform. I wanted nothing to do with that day. I just was playing my Game Boy.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember Davenport Central got on the stage, and their first song was from Seussical,
mm-hmm.
Oh, the Thinks You Can Think. And I was sitting there, and I was like, what is this? This is kind of magical. I mean, there's 60 kids, like just 60 guys and girls just dancing their hearts out, singing their hearts out. And I was like kind of hooked immediately. Mm-hmm. Once I got to high school, I auditioned, was in the show choir. And once that big kind of, I'm not playing the trumpet anymore happened, my sights really laid on vocal music. Yeah. And that was like the transformative, okay, this is the direction I'm going to go in. Because I had already been doing it and I really loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Our show choir was good. We weren't like great, but I was like the kid that was like, you know, I didn't play sports at all,
right,
but this is a competitive outlet. Mm-hmm. Like you go to competitions, you want to beat Davenport North, you want to beat other groups.
Right.
And it was my sport. Mm-hmm. Like I studied, I read the history books, the records of all the groups in the area and groups that were across the Midwest and the country, watched VHS videos. We would send each other VHS videos in the mail to like show each other's show choirs if you couldn't get to that region.
Right.
So I just was like the little show choir dweeb that could. And I was the one whispering in my director's ear, we need to go to this competition so we can see this group and that group. And, you know, for the most part, she really kind of gave me that that little job there. Like I helped her pick shows. Her name was Rosalie Dunnigan. She's retired now, but she was awesome. We did a lot of traveling out of state. Cause I would say like, we can go to this competition and see some of the best groups we'll never see.
Right. And
luckily I got to see those. And that's awesome. It was such a cool thing to do in high school. And it was kind of this spark that just has never left me.
Yeah.
And it was the first thing that made me say like, you know, maybe I would want to be a music teacher. Like I really never had thought that until I was in show choir doing this thing that I absolutely loved.
That's amazing. So there are going to be a couple times as we talk about show choir, coming from a person who has no experience in a show choir. You brought up what makes a great show choir. And I don't want to dig too far into what you're doing now with show choirs, but this is one of those moments. Tell me what makes a great show choir. What are the elements that one looks for within this? Because it is a lot of energy. And so for me, as like a person who like just drops in here and there and sees these types of things, it's like pulling that all apart.
Yeah.
It would be an interesting experiment. But so tell me a little bit about like, what are the things that you were seeing then or that you see now that make truly great show choirs?
So show choir has come, I mean, it is an ever evolving thing. So the answer is very different from when I started and now.
Cool. Well, let's hear it from when you started.
When I started, it literally was just like, you have great, impactful vocals, in tune, of course, like really great dynamic moments in the vocals. And then on the dancing component, you have clean choreography that is precise, energetic, fitting the song, and a backup band that gives you what I say, gasoline, adds gasoline into the tank so you can really just fire off in dance break moments or in ensemble moments. That would be my answer back then. Clean choreography, impactful, great vocals, a tight band, the
You're
end.
Good.
The end. You're good to go. You're going to win the competitions. Nowadays, it's so much more. There's so many layers to this art form, and everyone has a different answer of how they do it, which is great. It makes it so interesting. A lot of show choirs nowadays do have designed story shows.
Okay.
So like they are taking music and they are weaving it together to make a story.
Okay.
So the acting element is now coming alive and to the forefront even more than it used to be. Show choirs are actually starting to hire actual acting directors to give that guidance to kids because it's starting to become such a thing.
Right.
So vocally, it's kind of the same, but with the genre of music that is ever changing in the shows, like there's just so many more levels to what we're looking for when we're listening to the group. Choreography, my God, the the choreography that kids are doing now, like I don't know how they do it, because like I'm just like, it's at a different level. We've gotten so many professional dancers into this realm now that are giving just the most incredible, stylistically appropriate choreography to each song that is picked in a show.
Yeah, yeah.
The movement in the body is, again, it's kind of mind-blowing just what kids are doing nowadays, and the intense rehearsal process that it takes to get these kids to that level. So yeah, the choreography aspect is just kind of light years ahead of what it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. And back to the story element, I would say 9 out of 10 show choirs are doing these story shows.
Okay.
The story show has to make sense.
Right.
And a lot of people feel like they can pull that off, but it really, you have 20 minutes. Like a show is 20 minutes long. It's not a musical. It's not 2.5 hours to explain everything. You're condensing your competitive show into 20 minutes. So it has to make sense. And that's usually the first pitfall that a group has, is just, you're kind of watching the show and you're like, I see what you're doing, but
it's not working.
It's not working. So the show element and show design portion of it has so much more of a say nowadays than it used to, because what it used to be was 5 random songs.
Right. Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. So talk to me a little bit about your experience within this realm in high school, and I'm kind of always interested to see how like one thing leads to another and all these kinds of things. So it seems like, you know, elementary music got you going into music. You have this period of time where you're playing the trumpet, and that kind of pushes you to the next. And then you get this spark. You find your place. You find your people. And then you're in it. And how is that affecting you on all of the levels that we know that this kind of stuff affects an individual?
Well, music and show choir literally saved my life in high school. I was a closeted teen, and really that was the only saving grace that I had, and any peace that I could find was in that art form. So not only did it fuel me in a creative way that made me come alive more, it saved my life. Like that's all I had. And those people in that community were the ones that were there and supportive, and so that piece of it is, I can't say it enough. Like, it's just the truth. It saved my life, and it is why I have kind of continued to go into that field, because I'm very passionate about the fact that I know it saves other people's lives as well.
I mean, because at that time period in your life, you're just looking for some place to be you and to like not have to think 3 steps ahead. And I mean, and on so many levels, and like our stories are not similar in this sense, but just that feeling though, when you step foot into an ensemble, or I mean, if sports is your thing, like you get around your team or you get around your people, it's just this like sigh of relief, and then you go on from there. And so like for you to be able to find that, so important.
And with that, I mean, show choir was the first like gotcha thing. Like, yeah, I had been singing, I had been playing in band and jazz band and here and there, marching band. But like show choir was the thing that was like, oh, wow, I never want to feel any other type of way except for this.
Right.
Which in turn, in all of my research and going to all these competitions and stuff, there was a group from California, John Burroughs Powerhouse, and
you remember
they, oh, see, it all ties in, it all, Showstoppers Chicago was the competition. This group was really well known and they were going to be there. And we were very excited to also be competing at this competition. They did a ballad, which was not a pop music song. It was Eric Whitaker's When David Heard. Mm. And I was a sophomore in high school. They did it a cappella. They didn't show choirify it up. They just sang it a cappella. Mm-hmm. And I sat in that theater with, I mean, I'm getting goose pimples just thinking about it. Like the intense vocal mastery that these children had was just off the charts. And everyone just sat in silence. Check out Eric Whitaker's When David Heard, because it is a stunning piece. Mm-hmm. He's done Cloudburst, a whole bunch of other amazing things too. But that was the thing that like got me thinking in a different direction. I was like, oh my God, choral music is dope. Like, what the heck? Like, what is this?
Right.
You know, I went home. This is the dawn of the internet, kind of. Like, mm-hmm. I had to like go to his website and buy his CD from his website. Like, they didn't have Amazon. Mm-hmm. They didn't have anything like that.
There's no Spotify.
Yeah. So I got that CD and I started listening to it and I just was like, this is incredible. You know, I'm like going back to my director and she's like, well, Luther College, where I graduated, is they do this. Like, Nordic Choir, the choir I was in, like, this is their jam. Like, you need to check this out. So that got me into another field of music that I was like, wow, like, I want to be a music teacher. I want to teach choral music and I want to be a show choir guy too.
Mm-hmm.
And I will never forget that When David Heard, like, it just like ignited a new set of entirely different world for me.
And it's like, you're seeing more possibilities.
Yeah.
And that people have just decided that it's like, I can put these two things together.
Yeah.
And I can do it in a way that just kicks ass.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love that.
It led me to I did go to Luther. And this is kind of where the story takes a first major turn, because you would think that, like, I go to Luther, I become a music teacher, everything is gravy, everything is fine and dandy. And honestly, that's not my experience. So I went to Luther just so excited to become a music teacher.
Right.
But at that time, show choir was still very frowned upon by a lot of educators.
Yep.
Show choir was a very niche thing. It was big in the Midwest, but not very big elsewhere. And a lot of music educators just didn't find that it was like worthy. They didn't really see that it had like real world application or anything like that.
Right.
So it was poo-pooed. Like,
yeah.
And it was poo-pooed more than anywhere than at Luther College 15, 20 years ago.
Wow.
So I came in just super excited, wanting to create new opportunities. And I was facing a lot of like pushback on that.
Mm-hmm.
Even musical theater at that time, Luther didn't have a musical theater program. Like they just kind of, that was the extra thing.
Right.
Everything was choral music, which, again, don't get me wrong, I love choral music, but like that's only one aspect of singing.
Right. It's not focus on one aspect. It's focus with the exclusion of other aspects.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
I am, as a person, it's like, you ask me to go in and lead a show choir program, I'm not the guy to hire for that.
Yeah.
Like, you want me to come in and be the orchestra dude who knows the like core repertoire of the orchestra world like all day long. That's how I was raised. That's, you know, that's how I learned. But it was never in my household, or the thing that I'm thankful for was that when my dad bought me a bass guitar for jazz band purposes and I ended up forming an indie rock band and a metal band, that he was like, sure,
yeah,
just make whatever music you want. But like, so to me, it's always kind of sad to hear the story of like people who almost make it a mission to dump on other things,
yeah,
thinking that it elevates the thing that they're passionate about. And it's like, I don't know, maybe that feels cool in your mid-20s when you're just like, I'm so cool, I hate everything.
Yeah.
It just, I think professionally, it shows a lack of depth of understanding, I think.
And to just, like, tie it in a neat bow, like, to go back to it, the only reason that I started listening to choral music was because a show choir performed Eric Whitaker.
Right.
Like, that's the only way that that happened. Right. And
so you're on ramp to that. Yeah. Traditional choral music was one of these quote unquote extracurricular forms.
And I mean, they were a little bit gaslighty because Luther College had a summer program for years called Celebration Iowa. Mm-hmm. It wasn't exactly show choir, but it was a group of 26 singers on microphones. They traveled, it was the former state fair singers. They mm-hmm. traveled Iowa all summer long doing these 60 to 90 minute sets of popular music
right.
that Luther sponsored. But then when you get to the actual college, there's none of that. And not only is there none of that, they're like, we do not support this. We do not like right. this.
Yep.
So that was very, that disconnect I did not understand until I got there.
Mm-hmm.
I had a radio show, which was super cool. Mm-hmm. I did a Broadway soundtracks radio show, which was really cool and popular.
Mm-hmm.
My time slot was right before the football games.
Okay.
So I always was making fun jokes before the games would start. I'd be like, I know we got a lot of football fans listening. We would, you know, I just would have just such a good time doing that. I did a live concert in conjunction with my radio show. We called it One Night Only. I contacted 18 of my, at that time, my freshman class's best singers. I mean, mm-hmm. some of these people are singing professionally now in mm-hmm. world-renowned groups.
Right.
But they were my friends. Like, I knew them from the high school show choir circuit, and we were all at Luther, and I said, we're going to do this, you know, show, and everyone's going to sing a song from a musical, and it's going to be awesome, and it's going to be on my radio show. Went to the music faculty, said, you know, I need a recital space. Can I please rent one? And got a big no.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, this is just crazy to me.
Right.
And then, you know, we finally secured a space that was not a recital space. It was like an old carpeted room. Like, it just was so bad.
Mm-hmm.
But they let us have it. Thanks, Luther.
Right.
And, you know, and I made sure that all of the singers invited their private voice teachers, and not one musical faculty showed up.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was like, oof, this is so sad. Like,
yeah.
It was an amazing concert. People talked about it for weeks. Like, but it just kept, I kept feeling like I was hitting, like, creative. I was being snuffed out, really,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
creatively.
And I think another unfortunate thing to highlight there is that, so 20 years ago, in music school, I think we're roughly the same age, like, they were beginning to talk about, like, having entrepreneurial spirit, or, you know, like, music entrepreneurship was
yeah.
the first wave of what is actually, like, music business classes.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like there were any majors, because when I was looking at colleges, because I have a similar story in the sense of, like, I had this indie rock band, I had a metal band, and nobody was booking 16-year-olds bands to play
yeah.
because you couldn't at bars. But
yeah.
also, so it's like, well, if we want a place to play, I'm just going to have to find some place that will rent it to me and follow all the rules. And hopefully we get to have another one, you know, the next month or something like that. But it's like that spirit of, like, I want to do this thing. I see this thing. Here are all the parts to it. I'm just going to start checking all the boxes of all the parts.
Yeah.
Got to find singers. Got to find a space. Got to find a place for all this to live. It's like extra sad that the place, like, that is, I think, kind of tasked with giving you an environment to start pulling all these elements together is almost like kind of saying, yeah, but don't put it together that way.
Yeah.
And, like, there's really no reason for it, because, again, when we get out there in the world, or you fast forward maybe 10 years later, they would be telling you, if they were responsible, that there is no path to a career in music. You have to figure it out on your own, and here's how we figure it out. But it's like, You were doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, I was before my time because, yeah, I'll just spoiler alert, Luther is awesome now. They host classes for ed majors where they are talking in depth about show choir. Heck, the director of the world-renowned Nordic Choir, Dr. Andrew Last, is a former show choir director at Xavier High School in Cedar Rapids. I'll never forget their Let It Be rendition that they did when he was there. It was mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. And he's a big supporter. He still judges show choir, even though he is the director of Nordic Choir. Mm-hmm. So they got there, but not when I was there, it is sad. I spent 2 years at Luther, and I ended up leaving. And I kind of, I went back to the drawing board, really. Mm-hmm. Not only did I leave because I felt like it wasn't a place for me, I was coming out of the closet too. That was a very tumultuous thing. I also didn't like the fact that I was spending thousands and thousands of dollars and I didn't feel like I was getting anything really back, you know? Mm-hmm. I did music theory, ear training, all the courses, but like I wasn't getting the thing that I know that I was going to go towards.
Right.
So I ended up leaving Luther and kind of reevaluating. I was like, I don't know if I want to be a music teacher. Mm-hmm. Started taking some comm college classes because literally all the classes that we did at Luther were music, like music ed, just like you start on that track and that's all you do. Mm-hmm. You kind of get the rest like later in sophomore, junior, senior year.
Okay.
So I needed to start and get some stuff done.
Right.
While I was doing that, I started assisting with my alma mater show choir, at Davenport West for 2 years. And I started kind of designed their show the second year that I did it, and it was kind of one of the first story type shows in our area. Mm-hmm. Half of the show was just random songs. The back half of the show was a conglomeration of three or four songs that basically told the story about doing a spelling bee.
Okay.
That was the year that the Putnam County Spelling Bee was nominated for Best Musical, so we used that. Mm-hmm. We took Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious from Mary Poppins and a few other pieces, slammed it together in a tight 8 to 9 minute back half of the set, mm-hmm. and kind of started to tell stories with that. And through that creative process, again, I was like, yeah, I definitely still want to do this, but I don't know if I'm going to go back to school to become a teacher, because in being the assistant of just the show choirs, I was learning kind of the background of what teachers have to deal with every single day. Right. And it's not just teaching music. It is literally paperwork. It is dealing with administration. And God bless the great administrators out there. There's not enough of you. Mm-hmm. If you don't have your administrator's support, your life is kind of a living hell.
Right. It just takes 10 more steps to do everything.
Yeah. So I just started kind of assisting and also learning from my director who I had in high school. After 2 years of that, I started working with the Green Room Theater in downtown Rock Island, which is no longer a thing anymore. I stage managed a production of Angels in America. We did part one and part two. Tyson Danner was a part of the Green Room Theater. He's still doing amazing things in the Quad Cities.
Tell me about the Green Room Theater, because my experience in the Quad Cities, I've been here now, I think, 15 years.
Yeah.
And so I've like heard bits and pieces of these things, but where was it?
The Green Room Theater was in downtown Rock Island. You can still see kind of, it's not open right now. There's no business in there. It's on, I'm not from the Illinois side, so
right.
I think it's like a Second Street or I don't know. That main drive, the healthy store across the street.
I know where we're at now.
Mm-hmm. And they did some really incredible theater.
Was it that space that used to be an actual like movie theater?
Yes.
And then it was the Supper Club for a minute?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Right.
I know what it is.
And Derek Bertelsen and Tyson Danner were kind of the two leads on the Green Room Theater, and they did multiple productions, but I joined for both Angels in America productions, which Tony Kushner's Angels in America is an incredible play that is also a movie definitely check out the movie because Meryl Streep is in it and plays multiple characters, and it is, I bow down to Meryl Streep. So, but yeah, it was like a cool blip in Quad Cities theater history. Like, it was a very short run. I think money kind of dried and that was it. Like,
money is always the problem.
But like, there was some incredible QC actors. Jason Platt was in the show. He's incredible. Flaherty, I forget his name, first name, but incredible actors. Just, and it was such a cool time. And I learned so much from that experience, putting that together. And yeah, I just kind of started doing this and that. I did Guys and Dolls at the New Era Theater in Muscatine. Like, I just started really kind of going out there and doing all sorts of different things that filled my heart and filled my cup, and kind of took what I had already known and gleaned from my time at Luther in 2 years. And after my 2 years of working with the Davenport West Show Choir, I was contacted by a director in Muscatine at that time. His name was Nick Oswald, and he was getting ready for state contest, and he had seen some of my posts on showchoir.com, and he knew my involvement with the Davenport West Show Choirs, and he said, I need someone to come in and, like, give my group a come to Jesus. Do you think you could do that? We've got state contest coming up. I don't think we're ready. Like, and I was like, yeah, sure. So I came in, had an amazing rehearsal with this group, was super excited about it, felt really good. Like, wow, like, I actually know what I'm talking about. Like, this is cool. And Nick was very wonderful afterwards. He was like, that was just what we needed. Like, I've never heard them sing like they did today. Like, you got the choreography tighter. Like, I am so excited for state. By the way, you should come to state contest, see them, you know, do, employ what you just put in them. And I'm like, yes, I'm going to do that. So I came to state contest. They perform. It was... No joke. It was worse than when I had gotten there. It was like they forgot everything that I said. My heart was broken. I was like, oh my God. Like, I am, like, not good. Nick ran up to me afterwards and he said, I am, like, I don't know what happened. I think they got nervous. I don't, like, that I've never seen them be so not great. And I'm like, yeah, I, you know, I'm sorry. Like, I guess maybe I wasn't what you're looking
for. Sorry I didn't fix your choir.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, I just felt so sad. And he said, you know, no, I really do think it was nerves, and I want to have you come back. And I'm like, okay, well, that's stupid. Like,
but I'm not going to say no.
Yeah. I was like, okay, all right, you know. And I did come back, and I worked with him again. And he said, you know, come to this next, it's our last competition. Like, I really think, you know, they've worked with you twice now. We'll see how they do. Went to the last competition. And they, I mean, not only remembered everything, but just, like, I mean, they had their best performance ever. And, you know, at the end, Nick said, I would really like if you would come and assist next year for the entire season. And I thought, wow, okay, well, this is maybe something I could do. And I said yes, and we had a great, awesome little relationship. So Muscatine is a 4A high school, and Nick got that job when he was a first-year teacher, which is a little bit unheard of. A lot of new teachers don't get a 4A high school to, like, play around with. And he had no show choir experience in college. Growing up, he had sung in the Adventureland Singers, and that was basically it. So he was learning when I was – he was a director when I was a senior in high school. And then, of course, I joined him. And we kind of took this group who had this reputation of being the largest – you know, or being a 4A school, a large school that was the worst show choir at the 4A level. And in the 6 or 7 years that I was at Muscatine, we took them from the worst to making, you know, the top 10 in the state. So he was there for four or five seasons, and then he left, and then Jonathan Ryan was hired at the high school, and I worked with Jonathan for three seasons after that, and we won competitions, we took them everywhere. I designed all their shows. We really delved into the story show. We were one of the first Iowa show choirs to do the story show well. Right. Or at all, and now all the groups do it. So I'm not saying that they're copying us, because obviously there are groups on the coast that were kind of leading me to want to do that.
Right.
But we were one of the first ones to do it here, and just really cool, special times. We did a little bit out there stuff. I have a little emo flavor to me. I love the darker. So we had, you know, a show about a doll that gets its revenge on its owner because this doll is mistreated.
Right.
So the shows are definitely...
Was the show called Mistreated?
No, it was called Hello Dolly. Which you can see at the Black Box Theater right now. You'll talk to judges who judged us back in the day, and they still remember how creepy and cool these shows were, and how nightmare-inducing they were. So,
effective theater.
Yes, yeah. We did a Little Red Riding Hood show where we changed the ending, that Little Red Riding Hood falls in love with the wolf and becomes a wolf. Like, mm-hmm. you know, we just did all sorts of different things.
That's cool.
Romeo and Juliet, we had them, they didn't take poison. They, you know, ran off and lived their best lives. I mean, that's a pretty easy turn, but yeah. It was a great show employing popular music and some old standards as well. I just had a blast doing that. Near the end of, you know, those 7 years, I did start getting contacted more and more to do that kind of freelance work of mm-hmm. going in and working with groups that my friends had. I worked at a show choir camp called Show Choir Camps of America, which is an amazing camp for young teachers who might not have show choir experience to learn the ropes, to know how to do things, to hire the right people, and, you know, just kind of get a great crash course in a week. Mm-hmm. I worked at that camp for 12 years and, you know, kind of networked through that. And there comes a day where it's like you're getting so many requests to do the freelance stuff that you're like, well, I have to say no because I have this group and I've got to stay loyal to them. And, you know, the lines are getting blurred now where like I'm helping groups, but we're also competing against these groups.
Right.
So I had to make a decision, which was like, it's, you know, kind of either stay with the group or I could start this thing, this little side business that makes me extremely happy. And so I ended up leaving Muscatine, and I still did their show a few years after I left, designed their show for them, but mm-hmm. started the freelance thing. And the first year I did it, I think I had maybe like 7 or 8 clinics in, I judged maybe 2 or 3 competitions. And then that next year it was like, I was working with 25 different high schools,
wow.
judging competitions every weekend, January through April in mm-hmm. 15 different states.
Yeah.
And that has been my life for the last 6 or 7 years now. I've just been, that's my grind.
That's awesome.
November through April, I'm hitting clinics and then judging. So.
Because is produced by Mark Zyla and Jaron Michelle in the studios of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. Thank you for listening to this episode. Because I read Because by Mo Willems, illustrated by Amber Wren, I wanted to learn the Becauses of people I admire. Do me a favor and thank someone in your own Because story, and join us next time on Because.